What are you doing? I'll tell you what you're doing. You're listening to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Either you are, or I'll be skipping rope with your entrails. Ta-ta.
This is the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, your source for lore and so much more. Welcome back, adventurers, to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. This is Tom. I'm here with Lotus as usual, and we've been going through the books and the lore of Daggerfall, and this has been super exciting because we're discovering things every week that we didn't realize either originated back then or got changed in the series. And this week, I have come across one of the oldest, it might be the oldest, as far as I can tell, stories about sword singers, the Yakudins who eventually become the Red Guard. And this is going to be absolutely important lore for the next major Elder Scrolls game, Elder Scrolls 6, if it actually takes place in Hammerfall and has to do with the Yakudins and their descendants and all of that, which probably will. The beginnings of this are from 29 years ago, and we have pulled up the original books that show up in Daggerfall that talk about some of this lore, and we're going to see it come alive most likely in the next few years when the game comes out. Lotus, are you excited about this? Because this is super cool.
I am, and when you sent this one over to me, I actually needed to kind of research a little more, like read up on this one as well, because it wasn't one that I didn't realize how far back this one actually went.
Yeah.
Especially with some of the tie-ins where, like you mentioned, it's like they do a lot of really good deep dives in their own series with the new stuff, oftentimes, just even if it's a quick reference. And this is one of the ones that I actually had no idea was all the way back to a Daggerfall book and has subtly lingered in the series, even though it hasn't been at the forefront of anything. And we were talking about it in the pre-show. I think this is going to be one that's worth just keeping in mind whenever we see Elder Scrolls 6, whatever year that may be.
What's really cool about this is it sets the origin of some of the details about the Yakudins and then the migration over to Tamriel. It sets up relationships between Frandar Hunding, who is all over ESO, as you know, there's all sorts of things named after Frandar Hunding, but then his son, the Sword Singers, it gives little hints about the way that might work without giving too much away, so they still have flexibility to really flesh that out in the next game. But to think about how the seeds of this, like all sorts of things, go back 29 years. And Lotus, I had the question. I was like, does this actually show up in Elder Scrolls 1? And then we're just seeing it a little bit more fleshed out in Daggerfall. And from what I can tell, it doesn't. This is lore that originated at the second game of the series and has been basically untouched with just little bits of references in ESO since then and little bits of references in lore in the other games, but nothing major at all.
Exactly. This really seems like a Daggerfall specific starting point. As a lot of these, you know, we've gone over, they have different starting points and then change to a degree over some amount of time in the series. But this one definitely seems like the originator was Daggerfall and then hasn't really been too explored for the most part. It's just kind of been there and not been touched all that much throughout the series outside of ESO. So it's just kind of lore that's there for when we need it kind of deal.
Right. Like the seeds were planted 29 years ago, and who knows, maybe in the next year or two or three or whenever the next Elder Scrolls game eventually comes out, we will probably see this fleshed out. One of the things you and I talked about is in Skyrim, your special power was the Thum. You could shout and you could do cool things with that. And if this is going to be very specific to Hammerfell and the descendants of the Yakudin people, then we'll probably see sword singing as your special ability. But what does that look like?
Yes, your quote unquote, your Thum. Not
right.
Exactly, but like your superpower, because
right.
That was essentially what shouts were. They gave us a superpower.
Right. And so
honestly, I feel like it was the first in the series that kind of,
yeah,
you could always make yourself completely off the rails, but that was kind of like them almost just feeding you a superpower that you could work with, and then you could do all your other stuff. But it was like, by the way, this is why you're the chosen one, as opposed to an Oblivion. This is why you're the best friend of the chosen one.
You're the best friend of the chosen one. Yeah, in this next game, you might be a sword singer. And it seems like there are hints about how this actually works, and maybe only some people can do it. But what does that even look like? But here, let's go through it. We're going to read through Divad the Singer, not David, Divad, D-I-V-A-D, which trips me up every time I look at it, the singer. And just like we did with the other ones, I'll read through. Lotus can comment. This one's fairly long, and there's some other stuff I want to get to before the end of the episode. So I might take some less breaks as we read through this. But all sorts of cool stuff here. Let's get into it. Divad the Singer. This has an in-game author. I don't know who the real-world author is. I don't see a reference to that at all. But it's Destry Melarg. Don't know who that is. Like many of these old books, don't really know a lot about some of these authors. But it starts off and says, Divad the Singer is, in one body, two unique and distinct people. Divad is the most well-known of the Redguard heroes, Frandar Hunding's son, probably the most accomplished Ansai.
Feel free to tell us how you pronounce it in the comments.
Whoever lived. Yet early in his life, Divad appeared to thoroughly have rejected the way of the sword. So already at the beginning, Frandar Hunding's son, who was the guy who basically rose up and led the rebellion against the established empire in Yakuta and eventually led the migration of the Ragada to Tamriel, but also a sword singer. He rejects the way of the sword, already established right here. Divad was the only son of Frandar Hunding and was born late in Hunding's life, 2396 in the Old Way of Reckoning, probably about the First Era 760. So we're going back to the First Era here, by the Tamrielic calendar. When he was away, most of the time fighting the last of his duels and engaging in the many battles and insurrections of the period. At 11, Divad entered the Hall of the Virtues of War and began training. But at 16, he finally let his anger... Let his anger at growing up essentially fatherless, because his father was too busy with other stuff all the time, get the better of him. Divad broke his swords and left the hall to become an acrobat in a traveling circus. This feels kind of similar to like Queen Irene leaving to go adventure off into the world before coming back and ruling. What do you think?
For sure. It's also kind of funny that I just like how I want to go join the circus. This is...
Yeah.
Counter. You know, fine. Away to the circus. Sword singer. I'm going to be an acrobat or something.
Yeah. Yeah. But you can see how the talents could connect through, you know, being very physically capable and
exactly.
Agile.
Being an acrobat would be like, again, and if you're going to have great martial talent, you're probably going to be pretty athletic. And I would argue that you need to be incredibly athletic to do something like that.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. So it tracks. And he has, as we learn throughout the rest of this, he has a real sense of being an artist and that kind of thing. And again, that makes sense for martial arts, because martial arts is a form of art. You just use it to defend yourself, that kind of thing, instead of, you know, just entertain. But yeah. So yeah, it's in the name. The life in the circus was unsatisfying to Divad, and after 2 years, his innate artisan heritage drove him to become a musician and finally a bard. So early in the series, we have a very important individual who is a bard. That's great. Yeah, because
shout out to our friend Maddie Gon, who's part of the Elder Scrolls Online, you know, content creation team as well. It's like, yeah, it's all about bards, and it's like, bards have been in the series for a long time, so it's kind of funny that it's just like we don't play them all that often, but they're always there.
Yeah, it would be cool if they fleshed out more bard stuff in future things, but let's keep going. For 2 more years, he traveled, singing in the cities of the Empire, gaining no small amount of fame and recognition for his stirring and popular songs and music. Although Divad had publicly forsaken the way of the sword, it would appear that he continued to practice the compulsory forms of training he was taught in the hall. He carried no sword, but in the late evenings, and this is where it starts to get interesting, bright lights could often be seen. There's a typo in this. That's not just me stumbling over my words.
That actually is a typo that I just read around, whatever.
This happens in a lot of these old stories, as some of them just did not get cleaned up enough. But be often be seen in his tent. My sources say nothing more about this, but it may be assumed that the writer was suggesting that Divad was practicing the form of the way known as Shihai Shen Shiru, the way of the spirit sword, or simply Shihai. Divad was very popular with the people of the empire. and his music and concerts were well attended. Still, he could not escape his heritage of the sword. When the last emperor ascended to power and began to persecute the sword singers, Divad was among the first to attract his attention. Now, when it talks about emperor here, we're not talking about the Empire of Tamriel. We're talking about the Empire of Yakuda. This is something that was going on in that, I guess, world of, you know, political intrigue that we don't really know a ton about. So,
yeah, no, I mean, yeah, it's just, it's not the standard emperor that you would think of when you're just like, it's Tiber Septim or something.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
that.
Yeah. And this was way before Tiber Septim too. So, but this is the last emperor of, as an example. Yeah, but this is the last emperor of Yakuta. So totally different empire, totally different issues, but similar kind of plots. So it goes on. Once the Emperor Hira and his consort decided to go to war with the singers for control of the empire, he moved swiftly against those singers who were visibly a part of empire society. Most he had killed, but Divad's music and fame were so widespread that he sent a team of his personal guards to arrest him. Okay, now pause real quick. Other than the fact that Divad here is a bard, the empire cracking down on magical sword-wielding specialists who would stand against the evil things the empire is doing, does that sound familiar?
No, totally no parallels anywhere.
No parallels to a war that happens in the stars by any means.
Nope, absolutely not. No, this is like such a long-standing theme, just honestly in general throughout the game, where it's just like, yeah, okay, we got to do some nefarious stuff. We can't be having all of this going on outside of our control. And what a surprise that more gray areas in the series where it's just like, yep, the ruling powers are not just, hey, we're the good guys versus the bad guys. That's kind of very rarely the scenario in this series.
Yeah, yeah. And references to other stuff. We talk about the Lord of the Rings references all the time. We clearly have Star Wars references going on here and inspiration for these things, which isn't uncommon. I mean, this is how writing works, is you pull some idea from something else, you tweak it a little bit, and it becomes something else. But one of the things that's distinctly different between sword singing and Jedis and lightsabers is that the Jedis, although they make their lightsabers, they don't will them into existence with the power of their soul. So that's...
Maybe that's how they pick their colors, though, right? I'm not too up to date on Star Wars lore. Maybe it's just that's what the color really is. When you get your lightsaber color, it's just part of your soul.
Yeah. Somebody's yelling at the speakers right now about bleeding a kyber crystal in order to make it red, and all of the debates about how do you get the color and all of that. But that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, I'm not the right person to have that argument with, because I'll just believe whatever you say since I don't know anything.
So here, let's move on with that. The Emperor's men were either very lucky or very unlucky, depending on how you choose to view it, which is true for everything ever. Your perspective determines if you like something or don't. So yes, obviously. Being no fool, Hira sent 100 of his best guards, for even an unarmed singer was a very dangerous foe. I would assume, because if you can summon a sword with the power of your soul, you're never really unarmed.
Yeah, no, I would imagine, unless your hands are, but even still, I was going to say, even if you like bind their like hands, it's like, well, if you can form a sword or something in your physical hands and then just like drop your wrist back, it's like, okay, well, now I'm free.
And who knows if you even have to actually hold on to the sword in order to wield it.
Also,
maybe you can just will
terrifying.
It with the power of your soul to fly around and cut people up. We don't know. We've never seen it. So
yeah,
maybe.
Unsettling.
Yes. The luck was that they were able to capture Divad and place him in chains, for they came at him and he sat dining with his elderly mother. This is where it gets real dark. The disaster was that as he surrendered, they rashly struck the pleading old woman. We don't know who his mother was. She's kind of this unnamed woman, but she's old at this point. They struck her too hard, it would seem, for she fell dead with a single blow. So
brutal.
They beat her mother to death with one punch.
Yeah, that's rough.
Yeah. That single thoughtless deed, as is often the case in war, was the one pivotal factor causing their eventual defeat. That act ignited in Divad the spirit of the way. Up until that careless stroke, Divad was an ordinary artisan. No, an artist, a great artist, but no warrior, which seems to contradict the fact that before he went away and did this, that he was training in the art of war and was one of, I don't know, maybe he just hadn't really seen real battle yet. And that's the point of this part.
Or it's one of those things where sometimes until you're exposed to it, people don't know your full potential type of thing. Yeah. So maybe it's like that situation. It's like, oh yeah, he was always great, but he just never utilized it or something.
He wasn't
like
known
that.
As a warrior yet.
Right.
Yeah. The moment of her death, Divod rose from his seat, took his chains between his two hands, and began swinging the heavy chain in a deadly arc. Now, this I found unexpected, because I expected we would get, he summoned a sword from his soul and cut them all down. But no, he uses the chains to fight back. And this is effective. He slew four of the guards, gaining enough space to run and dive through the window and into the river. He disappeared into the night. So he beats them off with his chains in order, that's a terrible phrase to use, but is able to escape into the night. He doesn't kill all 100 of them, which felt like it was leading up to that, but that doesn't happen.
It sounded like he was just going to, you know, go completely crazy and knock everybody out. It's just kind of like, well, no, it began his ascent to being like a great warrior, but also... I guess you kind of have the situation of not embellished for effect of, oh, then he took out all 100 of them.
Right. Yeah. It's a little bit more reasonable to think that there may be four people in the room watching him and the other soldiers were out like on the perimeter or whatever.
Right.
And he was able to kind of beat them off. I said it again, accidentally, with the chains
them.
And then jump through a window and escape because he was agile and he probably ran faster than them or whatever.
For sure.
So
it does make it more believable as like a, this isn't quite so fantasyful.
Right. From that point, Divod was spotted many times and told of in many more rumors all across the empire. I love how he becomes kind of this like mythical character from that point on. Far more places than a mere mortal man could have ever been. People think they see him, but of course they don't because now he's captured their imaginations. At every point where Hera's men gathered to do mischief, the resistance was attributed to Divod. So now we've got this sort of like Robin Hood kind of quality going on.
Yes. And I'm sorry, that line to me when I read that originally too is so funny. When they gathered to do mischief, as just like a bunch of hired goons from like Batman or something like that. It's like, all right, boys, time to do some mischief. It's
right. Like, or gremlins. Like they're it's mischief time.
Such a ridiculous way of wording. But either way, that's just an aside.
Yeah, a little bit funny. All right, two more paragraphs in the story. As Hera moved against the singers and began forming his army to invade High Desert, it was Divod who carried the news to the singers. Divod was among those who climbed Hattu to find Hunding in his cave. So Frandar Hunding, his father, has been missing from the story up until this point, but it turns out that he's up in this cave. What is not well known is that Hunding at first refused to take leadership of the singers. The first attempt to interrupt him at his death poem caused him to drive the elders from his cave. He even formed the Sahai in his anger. Like, he gets pissed. They're like, hey, we need your help. You need to stand up against the empire with us. And he's like, leave me in my death cave. And they're like, come on, buddy. And he's like, he's got a like flame sword.
Which are the official sound effects.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I that's just very emo. Leave me alone.
Yeah, leave me alone. Like, I'm getting vibes of like old Luke from the sequel trilogy being like, just leave me alone. I'm done. Jedi. That's basically what we have here. It was Divod who re-entered the cave alone to speak with Hunding. Now, his son shows up, so I would assume he gives him at least a little bit more tolerance. To this day, no one knows what was said, what happened in that cave. Scribes of the time reported bright flashes of light and angry voices. I'm picturing them having a sword fight with magical, fiery, flaming soul swords.
Yeah, pretty much. That's what I'm getting. That's what I'm getting from this, too. So,
yeah. 5 long hours came and went. Then both emerged from the cave. Divod at Hunding's side. The rest, as they say, is history. Divod, who had not completed training in the Hall of the Virtues of War, became an advisor to Hunding and spent his time reading the newly completed Book of Circles. But his role in the Hammer and Anvil strategy was as a simple sword singer and fighter. It was not till the singers fled their native empire and landed in the new lands that his story truly begins. So There's all sorts of stuff that it references here. The completed Book of Circles, Roland the Hammer and Anvil strategy. That sounds like a attack on the mainland Tamriel kind of strategy. Hammer and Anvil was actually the name of the strategy that the Nazis were going to use in World War II, I believe.
Oh, interesting. That I or did
one?
Not know.
Was it one?
Oh, yeah, interesting.
They used the same phrase because the idea was that they were going to encircle the forces with two groups that came, that busted through the enemy line and then squished everybody between them.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Some real world history.
Yeah, that's actually, and it probably is, it's probably one of those more common concepts in war tactics to, you know,
encircle
and crush them.
Still interesting little tidbit.
Yeah. So what do you think so far about Divad Hunding?
So it's funny, he's very much portrayed as a reluctant hero in a lot of ways, which is interesting when it's just kind of like, you have this potential, but you're not the one that's trying to maximize it necessarily. It's almost like because of your situation, it's thrust upon you, and that's where you recognize what you're good at, as opposed to something you were just like working on to be good at, which is interesting as a premise because
it plays into the hero's journey that you basically the hero's journey is kind of a map that all sorts of stories use, old myths use, modern literature uses all the time. The idea of the protagonist is somebody who doesn't want to have to do the thing but then is convinced to do the thing, meets an older character who trains them in the thing, they then go do the thing, descend into the underworld and are changed forever. They come back successful and then can no longer fit into regular society. The world views them differently, or they don't fit in anymore, and everything's different. So
that
it definitely plays into that kind of thing.
Very much so. And that's something that like a lot of people, and I don't want to speak too much to it because I don't have direct experience, but a lot of times when you have to go really outside the norms for whatever reason, whether it's combat or something like that, it can be hard to adjust to being like quote unquote just a normal civilian type of deal.
Yeah.
And it's just like, this is one of those things that just kind of becomes part of you at that point, which is,
and he's a celebrity. He's a celebrity too.
And in this situation, I was going to say, it's not always like jarring in a bad way, but it's just like, it's different. It's different for you now. Life has changed for you, whether you wanted it to or not. You can't really go back anymore.
Yeah. So Divad becomes an important character in the... Well, Yakuta basically falls apart. There's this big civil war, and then the significant portions of it, if not all of it, who knows, because everything's rumor, but a lot of it falls under the sea. There's the cataclysmic end. The regatta, led by Hunding and Divad, make their way to Tamriel, and then they have to deal with the things they find in Tamriel. And this is it's like year 700 and something of the first era. So this is before the second era. It's before we have really good, I don't know, not foggy descriptions about the things that were happening in the war.
When history is a little more concrete going forward.
Yeah, it's not the Merithic era, but it's still early enough that the stories are full of different perspectives and different interpretations.
Correct. And anything prior to the interregnum really is kind of like that a lot of times, where it's just like, so much is law, and that's parallel to real life. When wars happen and conflicts happen, a lot of records are destroyed, and it just makes it a lot of like, oh God, what can we save that actually we remember history, you know?
Yeah.
As objectively as possible, never fully objectively, but you know what I mean.
Right. And the interregnum, so people understand the distance here, is in the second era and towards the middle to end of that era. So there's a considerable amount of distance between the first era, second era events.
Yeah, it's notable.
Right. So the other document I wanted to cover here is called The Song of Divad. This is a poem or a song that was written and is also vague in some ways, but also brings about descriptions of things that the lore may today, if it was written for a newer game, have stated differently. But also, unreliable narrators are part of the series, and the fact that it uses words and certain references slightly awkwardly is really kind of interesting because it plays into a different perspective. Now, maybe historically people back then saw things differently. Maybe the truth of the situation was that it was different and things significantly changed. And we're going to get into that because they bring up dwarves. They bring up giant goblins, Which everybody's like, well, the goblins are 4 feet tall. What are you talking about? Right. So,
right.
So here, let's get into this. I'll get through this relatively quickly, too. But this is Dvad. And now he is an important person. And they decide to cross the ocean in order to invade Tamriel and find a new place for their people. So it starts out and says, "We thousands traveled the great ocean deep. We of the high desert, to be surrounded by so much water. All we saw, all saw the new land rise from the water in the east. A land of richness and great beauty it was, and it gladdened our heart. A great city we saw, and a great port. We traveled close to see streets deserted, buildings pulled down and falling. A city filled with only bones and ghosts of the past, and it saddened our hearts." Now, what specific city this is, I would assume, is on the western coast somewhere. Maybe
one
near
think
Daggerfall, maybe
geologically from where they're going.
Right. I mean, the coastline
assumption.
Yeah. Somewhere between, I don't know, the northern and kind of mid part of the continent, you know, the coastline of Hammerfell, maybe. "Great Lord Prince Hunding landed with his generals and we singers to claim the new land." This is Dvad and his people. "It was empty of man. Unknown to us, there were others there. They were to break our hearts." It sounds like it's translated, right? "Dwarves were those who had been there first, but now no sign save bones and dust." So did they see cities of the dwarves that had been abandoned? We know most of those are underground, but there are structures that are above ground. So
yeah, you can see Dwemer structures, or at least part of them, above ground oftentimes, depending upon the region you're in.
Right. So maybe they show up and the dwarves have already disappeared and they're just finding the remnants of that stuff. That would make sense. "To the high temple of the city, Hunding came to pray. No weapon or armor upon his breast, no helm upon his brow did rest. In the silence of the dark was a heinous act committed, a dagger as he kneeled in prayer. The healers, too, were summoned. An all-out battle from the emptiness came. Surrounded we were upon the shore, our armies still in the ships so far away. To the boats our men raced and rowed, and soon two great armies in battle were met." So we're like, okay, who is this? Who's fighting them? It's not the right. Dwemer. What is going on? "From whence appeared this mighty horde? We could not guess. But wave upon wave of yellow warriors," they're called the Yellow Warriors. That's their title. "Came and dashed themselves upon our rock. Not for nothing did we send the evil Hera to his early grave. It seemed the sun rose and descended to its evening home, and the battle did continue. Soon the yellow horde was stacked upon itself, body upon body, and still they did come. But not for nothing did we send the evil Hera to his grave." That repetition of the evil Hera to his grave is the old emperor.
Yep.
And the fact that they were, you know, the rebellion worked, roughly speaking, and yeah, they were able to leave and come to this new place. So if you were just reading this, Lotus, who would you think is this horde that's attacking
them? So it's weird because, like, that's one of the things that it's like, I was struggling with this when I read this. I was like, well, the Yellow Horde is like an interesting thing because I can't remember this ever being really discussed unless I'm just totally spacing it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, yeah, in the series.
It's another one of those things, because, like, we haven't had, other than ESO bringing up certain other Hammerfell, right, Yakudin history stuff, we haven't had a game in the series that really approaches the Redguard people in any significant way. So a lot of this is just kind of unreferenced other places.
So of course now, like, what would I think that actually means? Because, like I said, I kind of true. My only assumption is this a reference to Ultmer in the area because they have the yellow hue to them, type of thing, and okay, they would have,
yeah, the yellowish
been in the
skin
area,
right?
So, like, they're known for, like, the golden skin type of thing. So it was like, was this kind of their war against the elves, for lack of a better way of putting it, type of thing? Like, it,
right?
Just because we know that a lot of the areas or a lot of these regions have separated more over time because not everyone was indigenous, i.e. the Red Guards. Like, literally, this is the story of them showing up. So, you know, they weren't there originally. And maybe they had to displace them. And it's like, we don't have a lot of interactions with Dwemer, but, like, if they are elves as well, or Myr. So it's like, that might be just a tie-in where it's just like, they don't know the difference between which Myr is which, you know what
that's
I
true.
Mean? Like,
that's true.
So yeah, that was my thought, just based on, like, maybe the golden hue you oftentimes see with Altmer. Did you have a different idea from
Well, I mean, it was kind of spoiled for me because I was already doing research on this, but
sure.
But reading through it in order, it's interesting that they don't reveal it. Like, it's not revealed yet. So here, let's keep going with the story because we'll find out where it goes.
Yeah, if you want to just hold the actual answer to the end, that's fine.
We'll get there. This will be fun. A break within their lines, and then all were gone save those few who upon the ground did lay and moan. The silence was deafening, and our battle victory cry did ring out. The day is ours, and now another valiant victory for the people of the Blade. Now, this goes to show there were only a few of them on the land when they get attacked by this horde, and they're able to fend them off. So the Swordsingers are formidable warriors at this point,
right, which we have heard about through the ages and stuff like that. They're known for being like kind of wrecking like a bit of a wrecking crew when you're dealing with them due to their martial prowess.
Yeah, rare but extremely dangerous.
Yep.
A new land was ours, and Hunding to mourn. In our honor we did swear, his book to hold close. In his honor, the land we did name after his last great battle and the hammer blow, we called it Hammerfell. A new name for us, the Singers, Red Guards. No, Red Guards. So Regatta became Red Guards.
Yes, Regatta becomes Red Guard, which is something I'm pretty sure we've talked about before. We've made reference to that.
Yes.
So this is just one of the originators of that being formed.
Right. And according to this lore and the mythology of this poem, that's when that name stuck. Like, this is the origins of that. The battle over, we did seek to rest, and the land so rich to settle and dwell, to peace, to rest, to have a home. Oh, this land of Hammerfell, and it gladdened our hearts. We thought we were home at peace, but the battle had just begun. For with the morning sun did come again the yellow horde, and fight again we must, and again and again and again, and it saddened our hearts. They keep having to defend themselves.
I know, it's constantly trying to, it sounds like a lot of justification.
Right, but it starts to make sense. It'll make sense in a moment. The council was called, for day after day the fight went on, and no end in sight. From whence do these goblins come? We cannot endure their endless coming, and our hearts did break. So even though they're really strong fighters, they're getting worn out. They keep getting attacked every day by these hordes of goblins, not orcs, not elves, goblins that call themselves the Yellow Horde. A new hope, a plan was Divad's role, and he sent out 60 to spy our foe, to learn their secret, to learn from whence they come. They told of a mighty rent in the sky. This gets super weird. A mighty gateway in the air it did hang, like a door in the hall of virtue, and from it they did spring in an endless line, and of it the mages could powerful magic sense. This is a monster closet in a video game that just keeps spawning more enemies.
Yes, I was going to say, it is kind of funny, and like the first thing I think of for anybody who has weird reference, Futurama, it's like, we'll just have the robots just like, they'll just keep killing until they fill up their kill quotas and power down. It's just like, all right.
Yep. So, but we also have this like a door in the hall of virtue. There was the talks about these halls where there are magical doors in these halls. It seems like there was, but who would be summoning hordes of, and we find out that these are giant goblins, by the way, they're not regular goblins.
These are the giant goblins.
Right now that raises questions in my mind. Either the goblins used to be bigger and they got smaller, either they killed all the giant ones off and they were no longer there and just the smaller ones existed, or were they misunderstanding what they were fighting?
I was about to say, and this comes to the thing of like, do you know what you're fighting? You can refer to something as something and then not realize you're fighting like something totally. It's like, no, like.
Yeah, what things come through portals into Tamriel? Daedra.
Right, exactly.
Were these Daedra?
Right. Are you fighting scamps? Like, and you think they're big goblins and it's
or,
like,
or okay, bigger. Well, no, there's all sorts of other Daedric things that are bigger than goblins,
absolutely.
But still look menacing like a goblin might to somebody.
Absolutely.
Who's
no, there's a lot of potential that these aren't actually goblins.
Yeah. So here, let's keep the story going. Oh, to close that door and staunch the flow. Divad to see himself did go. In him, the warrior blood was pure, but magic was a companion too, for Divad did sense the power, and in him, the plan did grow. The singers of singers, our army was built, but few there were with Ansei power, and fewer could wield the Shehi. But Shehi could all but close the door, but Shehi of power and purity above mortal man. So they're using all the powers they have to fight back, basically.
Yep.
And try to close this door. But Divad did have a plan, for lifeless the singers did make blades of power. all warriors to wield and use the magic within. Much more magic and power was needed. But Devad did have a plan. He, the singer swordsmiths, did call, and with them he joined the Shahai with the forging of the steel and power. Five mighty swords alive with power. The spirit of Devad within each blade he did pour. So like Sauron pouring his will into the ring, Devad pours his powerful sword singer soul into five special blades, which is freaking great, because if we see this in the next Elder Scrolls game, what if there are quests where you have to find all the swords and bring them back? That feels absolutely like a plot line that they would use and lean on.
So much of this just seems like it's just like ripe to be like, oh man, we could really turn this into like an epic storyline, because again, they've just the structure of stories nowadays is a little different than it used to be. And I feel like this fits that type of like superhero narrative that they've kind of done with some of the more recent stuff. So it's like, this kind of just is a story perfect for that. And it all fits and ties into the lore perfect.
And we've talked about this multiple times. The beginnings of the more recent games in the series, the ones that came after Daggerfall, all began either during Daggerfall or in the time between Daggerfall and Morrowind and the other games they were making between those two. And it seems like if you look at the plot of Skyrim, that plot was already set up in a very similar way in these old documents. And we're now seeing the plot of Morrowind was already kind of set up in those old documents. The plot of Hammerfell, if that's the name, next game in the series, is right here. It's like, this is
it. It's been crafted and we just haven't played it yet.
Yes. So weak he was when blades were done, a newborn babe he could hardly match in strength. So it wears him out. But the blades were alive with his power and we had hope, for Devad had a plan. Our five Ansei each did hold one of the blades, the five of magic. With them did surround the gate, and he called upon the Shihai. O unknown gods of war. Unknown gods of war. Who is that? Our beauty beyond our mortal eyes, the blaze of power did the five blind. The fire down the blades poured. So now we know that they're fiery blades, which is cool. It devoured the ground, the goblins, the gates, the rent in the sky, all it consumed. Of the goblin army, none did stand as before. Every living yellow warrior now stood small as a child they were. Now, this is implying that by this power, they shrunk the size of the goblins, and that's why goblins are smaller now.
They're small now.
this is one of those, you know, like in our own world, we have these myths of like, and that's why it always rains when it, you know, that's why a thunder always follows lightning, you know, like that kind of stuff, like these mythical explanations, the fairy tale explanations for why things work the way they do. That's kind of what this feels like. We just had the best weekend. My daughter came and visited, and I wanted to have an experience that everybody would have a blast with and remember for a long time. So I loaded up the I Expect You to Die trilogy on our MetaQuest 3 VR headset, and oh my gosh, we had so much fun. And you might be thinking, I Expect You to Die, wait, what does that mean? Well, imagine being a retro spy in a world that's trying to murder you on every mission, and you have to figure out how to get through the puzzles, how to not get shot by lasers, how to launch a car out of the back of an airplane. That is the first thing you do in the first game, and my son was able to complete that quest. Later on, when we got to the third game, we were setting off explosives in an underwater base. We used Chromecast to project it up on the TV, and we all played together. One person would put the headset on, and they'd look around, and they'd try to figure out the puzzles, while the rest of us would say, well, look over there, and what did that note say? And we figured it all out. It was like having an escape room in our living room for the entire weekend. We'd take breaks and go out for dinner, and then we'd get home and I'd say, what do you guys want to do? And they're like, let's play more of I Expect You to Die. And I was like, holy crap, this is so much fun. Oh, and believe me, they died, but they also figured out the puzzles. And the settings and the characters were hilarious and really well done. There's like a storyline that goes from the first game to the second game and then to the third. And you're Agent Phoenix and they keep trying to kill you, but you keep coming back. It's such a great time. And I've been a fan of this game for a while. This was just my first opportunity to play it with her and everybody in the house at the same time. But what's really cool is that they're sponsoring the podcast, and they've decided to give our listeners for the next 60 days 45% off with a code you can use on your MetaQuest account. So put in Elder Rising, capital E, capital R, Elder Rising dash 8904 FC. Again, Elder, capital E, Rising, capital R, all one word, dash 8904, capital F, capital C. 45% off this amazing experience. It's not even just a game, it's an experience. Go pick it up, and if you can't remember the code, it'll be in the description, so don't worry. Oh, and believe me, I expect you to die and have an awesome time doing it.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
All right. Unable to wield the weapons of grown men, unable to wear armor too large, they fled because they were shrunk. Fled to the caves and under the earth to disturb our peace no more. The gate, it was gone from sight. Divad, one more task did have, the five swords to lay to rest. Too powerful they would be for man, tempting to use, yet a great danger to all Hammerfell. The swords get hidden. Divad, yeah, I mean, this totally feels like it's setting up a plot. Divad and the five Ansai did climb the mountains to the north. Divad and the five blind Ansai. Only Divad did return. The swords lost to mortal men. Our hearts were gladdened. Now notice that the Ansai are also blind. Who also is blind in the series?
Right. We have all the what do you call it? Anybody who reads the scroll,
the moth like priests,
the monks,
yeah,
the moth priests,
yeah, and basically anybody who tries to read an Elder Scroll, yeah, yeah.
Moth priests in general, but I was going to say anybody trying to read an Elder Scroll, moth priest would be the main one. It's like the more you gain from it, the more blind you get until no more
right.
sight.
Right. So is that why these people are Ansai? Is because they are given knowledge that removes
right.
their
they
sight?
Too much knowledge at the cost of something else.
Or the same knowledge that would be revealed in an Elder Scroll, but just yeah. through a different culture with different names for things.
Right.
Possibly. But I love that the swords are just kind of hidden all over the place and that there are these wise old people. I mean, it feels kind of like the old guys up on the mountain in Skyrim, you know? Maybe they're the ones, maybe they hide away somewhere. They have knowledge about where these swords might be that plays into the plot of the game. I don't know. You know, this is their version of Greybeards, basically.
Yeah, pretty much.
But Divad's spirit had left him too, and upon his bed did lie, to compose this poem for his people to learn and know, and our hearts were saddened. On the 12th day, Divad did die. His spirit all had gone, and all was left was our beloved land, the land of Hammerfell, and our hearts were broken. So this wraps up with basically like he gave himself in order for us to found our new place to live and fight back the enemies. Notice the enemies weren't mannish races or elven races of any sort. It was these giant goblins, if that's really what they were. Right. So we don't have to feel too bad about them murdering a bunch of goblins. Although as the series has gone on, like we've talked with orcs, these creatures, we learn more and more that they're kind of like real people. Maybe we should give them a little more respect, unless they, of course, invade your farms and then you need to defend yourself.
Yeah, defend yourself.
Sure. There is an editor's note here that is baked into the text. It says, Destry Melarge has translated this song, same name from the previous document that we read, which began as Divad's death poem, but notes that he believes that it ends at this point, with the following six phrases not published in this translation being added by a later bard. Melarg notes that Divad did return from the mountains, and his daughter, Sincel, heard him speaking in his sleep of placing the five great magical swords in the depths of the mountain caves. Each Ansai who came with him stayed with their sword. Somehow she believed that they derived immortality of a sort from the magic in the blades. Thus the tale has grown about the five caves and the guardians of their swords. Although Divad was a living man and helped found Hammerfell, there is no scholarly evidence for the magical swords, the giant goblins, or the mountain caves. Most modern scholars believe that this is simply embellishment of the original death poem. The wresting of the land from the resting, like pulling away from the land
not
from the
resting,
goblins,
like sleeping.
Not sleeping, it has a W in it, goblins, and how they were banished seems far-fetched, since any who enter a cave or dungeon today can attest that goblins are a mere 4 feet tall. So even in the editor's note, they're like, okay, the stuff about the making of the swords, these old guys guarding them, where they were put in caves. We can't find caves with swords. Like, it's been hundreds of years, thousands of years, probably. Who knows? Like, man, this all just feels like an old story. But setting this up for Elder Scrolls 6 feels like it is a absolutely perfect story for the way that you would set up what's going to happen in there.
Now, obviously, when we say that, we don't mean literally playing the story, in case that's not obvious. We mean just the way the story is constructed.
The idea that, like, the Last Dragon board would come and there were stories and myths about the end of times and all of that, the way that stuff plays out in Skyrim, you could have something very similar here where, let's say, what if, I don't know, what if the Thalmor, by the events of Elder Scrolls 6, are becoming extremely too powerful, and now they start to try to conquer Hammerfell. So the people need to defend their homeland from this elven invasion because the Empire isn't going to do it anymore, and they have to defend themselves. And so there's a myth about Divad, and maybe even the return of Divad. Maybe we'll get like a, I don't know, like a Morrowind type story of like, oh, it's his spirit returned or something like that. And he has to wield the swords or build an army by distributing the swords to his, you know, greatest companions in order to fight back the Empire or something like that.
Right.
That, I mean, that seems simple and so obvious. And if we get a reveal sometime in the next few years of this is Elder Scrolls 6 and this is what the plot's going to be, I hope you guys look back on this episode and go,
they're like, hey,
they called it.
Yeah, this semi-random book from Daggerfall actually really set up a lot more of this than we realized at the time.
Yeah. I mean, it's all right here. Lotus, I mean, I don't have any doubts at this point that this is going to play into that story. If it is, again, based in Hammerfell and the about region, the Yakudin descendants and all of their people.
100%. I really, again, we kind of talked about this a little pre-show, but just as like a little behind the scenes, like, assuming they're not going totally out of left field with like a different plot entirely, I understand where this originally started to come from. And like, it feels like a perfectly normal flow to how the series might go on. And still less lore, more gaming nowadays in general, you want to make things relatable and accessible to a large audience. And this has so many things that you could have be different and unique to the story, but have parallels to style of game that so many people have jumped on the Elder Scrolls thing because of Skyrim, and it will be relatable to them. And that's a very businessy style of, you know,
well, you have to consider all of it. You have to consider what's going to work.
Feels like it's like designed to be just like, wow, this is just, you guys set this up way before and you didn't even realize how efficient maybe it was actually setting up the next game 30 plus years later.
Yeah, I think it's 29 years between this being and published and so the written before that during the development time.
Right, and I mean, we certainly are not seeing Elder Scrolls 6 this year, so.
That's true. I have another prediction too. I predict that when Elder Scrolls 6 is announced, if it is to Hammerfell and is focusing on the Redguard, we will have a few things happen. People who are secretly racist are going to say it's too woke because it's about black people.
Because it's about anything other than the most generic thing ever. Yeah.
And those people need to just go find a rock and crawl under it and never come out. Yeah, secondly, we're going to have people like lore experts, quote unquote, and we're not experts, but we're going to have people who claim to be experts who are going to say that this breaks the lore of the series. How would they go? Why? Like, this is not what sword singing is, blah, 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 blah. And they're going to get mad that it breaks the lore. But here's the thing. This is not a book that was released for ESO in order, like 2 years ago, in order to set up the next major Elder Scrolls game because it was convenient to set up the lore and to redact things. No, this is a book that came out 29 years ago. And if the lore matches this book, then those lore experts and any of the other terrible idiots on the internet have no bones to pick about this. Point back to this book. If you are going to end up in an argument online with somebody who's like, well, this game is woke or this game is dumb because they redacted the lore, the proof will be right here. If everything does play out the way I'm kind of hoping it does and predicting that it will.
So from somebody who really avoids just being involved with foolish discussions like that, which happens so much, and it's like 85% of the internet at this point, which is a shame. It's pretty funny because like I always kind of look at it, man, if you are easily offended in any way, shape, or form, this is really not the series for you, regardless of direction, because this series, like, this world's super fun to be in and play the games in, and it hardcore sucks as a world. Everything is miserable.
Everything's
miserable.
Everybody's racist against everybody. The world is out to kill everyone at any moment.
Yeah. So it's just like, and that's why I kind of like just experiencing what this series is for what it is. And it's just like, I am aware my headcanon is not necessarily what is being written because I don't own the IP. So
sure, yeah, but that's my theories about this, and I think it's so cool.
Tend to agree with you. I think it seems almost too perfect of a setup, which I guess could be a funny misdirection where it's like, no, it literally was too perfect of a setup, now it's something different.
And of course they're going to expand this stuff, like the details here are myth, and so if the swords don't look fiery enough, and I'm putting this in air quotes, then that's fine, because the stories were written by people who aren't particularly reliable. You know, maybe the fact that they glow in a certain way reminded people of fire, even if in the final game it doesn't actually look like fire, you know?
Sure.
Or maybe each of the swords, each of these five swords that you find, has a different elemental effect, and one of them is fiery, but the others aren't, because they do other stuff. You know, like,
well, they also love making one piece of lore oftentimes just kind of be like, was it interpretation things? Because I don't think the arguments over what kind of trees in Cyrodiil will ever end. So, like,
sure. But like, you know, I am of the opinion now that being overly detail oriented about old lore to the detriment of fun is a bad idea.
Well, games are supposed to be fun, so I would hope you would want to prioritize fun.
Right.
But
yeah, so I'm okay with a little bit of redacting stuff and being like, well, in the game it comes out like this, because I mean, heck, the models for games are different; they evolve because you have new artists designing them. Werewolves in Skyrim do not look like werewolves in Morrowind; like, they're not the same, you know. Like, and it's because you have development and advancements that allow you to make those changes, and it hopefully adds to the feeling and the fun of the games. And I'm all for that. Like, being a stickler to old lore stickulars never changing can actually be detrimental to the series. Like, holding on to too much, we've seen this happen in a lot of media over the last decade, where they have to stick so closely to things in order to appease the super fans that it feels like they're just bending over backwards, and it actually makes the plot worse. So,
well, yeah, and don't get me wrong, I was going to say, as somebody who's played through the series from the beginning and beaten most of the games and is close to beating the last couple remaining ones, some of the dumbing down of the series that people don't like, I totally understand it. Other stuff, and it's like, well, it's super accessible now. Just because it's complicated doesn't necessarily make it better, and I'm really glad they ditched some of the stuff from some of the older games, because they were rough.
Absolutely. Can you imagine if, in the making of Elder Scrolls 2, Daggerfall, they were like, no, we can't change any of the lore of Arena? That would have been a terrible decision. Can you imagine that? Come on. All right. So I'm getting off my little soapbox. Back in the corner. All right. There you go.
Lotus, in the corner.
This has been super fun getting into this stuff. I'm now even more excited for Elder Scrolls 6. But
no, I really, this was a good find, Tom. Thanks. I actually really like this one. When you pulled this one forward, it was like, ooh, this has got some, other than this being kind of a cool story, this one has some pretty strong implications maybe for where the series might be going forward.
Yeah. What if we get bards as like an actual playable thing? Bards? And the singing has something to do with the power of the sword. That could be really cool. Anyway, okay. If you have any other thoughts about this, comment, join us on the Discord, all of that stuff. You know where we are. But we have to go take a quick break, welcome our new patrons, and hit the random page button, which I haven't done yet. I don't know what that is. I'm going to do it while we do the little sword transition. It's going to be sword singing. We'll be like, what? How did that happen? But don't go anywhere. We will be right back.
This is Hamish Morak, Dragonborn, and you are educating yourself to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast.
Alcatraz Prisoner in chat says, it makes sense to change the lore in an ever-living world like Tamriel. Yeah, makes sense, right?
Correct. Solid. Sounds like things just change over time.
Yeah, imagine that.
Weird.
But hey, welcome to our newest patron, Caden C. So glad that you decided to join us. Hopefully you are enjoying your ad-free episodes, and everyone else who would be interested in getting ad-free episodes or bonus stuff like t-shirts and stickers, joining us on a patron chat, which is going to be next week. Because this,
I was going to say, that's next week, right?
Yeah, the 25th is the last Thursday of the week. So 9 p.m. Eastern on the 25th. So there's still time to sign up and join us for the patron chat if you'd like to do that. And patrons always get to pick the topic, or at least vote on the topic in order to determine and kind of narrow that down. So come join us for that. Also, shout outs to our Daedric Princes, Kira C, Peter R, and Austin B. Thanks so much for the continued support. And Lotus, we got some new reviews that came in on Apple Podcasts in the US. If you leave a 5-star review, we'll read it out on a future episode. This one is from Falsy Kaith, who says, "This is for Lotus." That's the title. "This is for Lotus, 5 stars. Love the show. Been watching for a few years now. Will Lotus be revisiting his Daggerfall playthrough? It's been a year and the people are jonesing for new episodes."
I know they are. It's actually funny. I am currently trying to figure out how to get a schedule to get the completion of it.
Lotus has been a little bit busy, if you haven't noticed.
I do apologize, because I know a lot of people have been like, "I'm just super excited to like see how this ends." And I know, again, I'm trying to stay blind while playing these things, just for the entertainment value, as well as just like experiencing it like you would have to back in the day, which has, I know, some funny parts, but then also can be problematic when it takes me forever to do literally anything in those games. Yes, there is a plan to try to get it done. From my understanding, I think I'm pretty close to the ending. Like, I think I'm in the last quarter of the game. I am really trying to figure out how to at least complete the Daggerfall series. I do want to move on to a couple of the other stray ones that I haven't done. Some of the weird one-offs, but I really want to finish Daggerfall for you all. It does stink that it's taken me so long. I actually have one that I've been trying to edit, and it's just been not cooperating, from Extra Life, which was actually like at this point kind of hysterically late. I never uploaded the Extra Life one, which is just a disaster, but people told me it was funny. We raised a bunch of money for my failure.
You have to know by this point that the things that you think are disasters, everyone else finds entertaining.
I was just like, I don't know. I couldn't cure my werewolf stuff, and just every town was just empty. Everybody just started fleeing from me. So it was just nothingness all the time. And I'm like, I literally can't feed. I don't know what's going on. And it was hours of this, and it was a disaster. But I never uploaded that to YouTube because I had some stream issues. It broke a couple times. So I've got to get that clipped together so it's watchable for everybody, because it was pretty cut up. But yes, hopefully soon. I appreciate all of you, and I'm glad so many of you have enjoyed it, that you would like to see the conclusion. I'm going to try to get it done, hopefully soon, for everybody.
Well, good luck. Good luck. Yeah, that'll be fun when you're able to get to it. But I know sometimes stuff is tricky.
I would really love to finish it, because it also gives me a twitch that it's not done. Yeah. And I know that I'm getting close, especially after I think I've streamed it for like 47 hours.
Nice.
Just trying to do the main story.
Yeah. Well good luck with that. Very large. All right. So we've got another review. This one comes from ThunderGoose440. Oh, and by the way, thank you, Felsie, for that 5-star review.
Oh, yeah. Super appreciate you.
Thank you so much. ThunderGoose448 says, "Howdy. Howdy, y'all. Thanks for all the laughs. I've been listening to this podcast since the Oblivion remaster. Keep up the great work. Love y'all." Well, thanks, Thunder Goose.
I'm so glad.
Yeah, love you too, man.
You enjoyed our
appreciate that.
Oblivion stuff.
Or Woo Man. I'm not sure which gender Thunder Goose is. Sorry to assume that. But thank you so much for that. But hey, Lotus, are you ready for our random page?
Yes.
I clicked the button.
As long as it's Sword Singers.
It doesn't coincide with Sword Singers, but it does coincide with weird magic stuff. So we get that.
All right.
It says online Sigic Order Skill Master. To complete this achievement, you need to rank 10 in the Sigic Order skill line. This is achieved by completing the following quests, each giving you a higher rank. And then just lists out the quests: the Sigic Calling, Breaches of the Bay, Breaches of the Front. It goes on all the way down to the Tower's Fall. So this is, you're an achievement hunter. This is something you probably already have, because this has been out for a long time.
Yeah, no, I do have this, but that is definitely appropriately random. But yes, I do have that achievement.
There you go. 50 points. Type Somerset achievements. Sigic Order Skillmaster. It's got a cool little image of like this glowy symbol
thing. They reuse some of them, but I actually really like some of the achievement pictures are actually kind of funny sometimes. I appreciate some of the artwork too.
What if we did an episode someday about all the weird pictures? It would be photos. So good for an audio podcast, primarily audio podcast.
Like what, 98% of our audience is audio? Yeah, that'd be a real good episode.
Real good. I'm sure people would love that. All right. Well, there you go. That's our random page for the week. Lotus, anything going on with you? You guys able to get some episodes done?
It took a little while. We got Tales up. We had a nice, because everybody likes the longer form of Tales. So it's a little over 2 hours we had for Tales, where we kind of talked about all the new stuff, because I got my dungeons. We got to discuss them in depth. And then on top of that, the preview for the next update is already out, because ESO just kind of keeps doing stuff super quick. But they did the and Ask Me Anything. We went over that, which was not... there really wasn't much to it, honestly.
Okay. Right, you're pitching it real hard.
Yeah, no, that's why we didn't really... We basically covered it quickly and just... It's if you like listening to our stories, that episode is very story-heavy, because it was mostly just us talking about the fun of the new dungeons, because we really all enjoyed them and some of the new stuff. So it's definitely a less news focused episode and a more story focused episode of Tales, if that's more your cup of tea, because we kind of do both on that show.
Got it. Well, cool. We'll go check that out. Tales of Tamriel, up all over the place. You guys know how this works.
Yeah, and then very easy to find. Just look at the name. You'll find either the official books or our podcast. Those are really the only two things.
Yep. And then, of course, there's my other shows. If you're into Fallout lore or Lord of the Rings lore, I've got Lorecasts for those. And there's all sorts of shows on the network. Big shout out to the Final Fantasy Lorecast. Just finally graduated from a Rocket Club show to an official show, because they hit 50,000 plays. So congratulations to them. That's big news on the network.
Good job, Ben.
So good job, Ben. And yeah, go to robotsradio.net. Find other shows to listen to. There's all sorts of stuff out there about all sorts of games and nerdy fantasy topics or anything else that you might be interested in. But thank you, everybody, for joining us. Lotus, thanks for being here. Chat, thanks for being here. We will be back next week with our patrons talking about, well, they haven't decided yet, but we'll find out. And until then, have a wonderful rest of your week, and we'll see you next time.
Watch where you're singing your swords.
Thanks for tuning in to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Check out robotsradio.net for more podcasts just like this, and join us on the Robots Radio Discord. Be part of a community of over 5,000 people who are excited about video games and so much more. Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play.